Welcome to The After Party, the weekly follow-up to sermons from Harbor of Hope Christian Church in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. We sit down every Sunday with the pastor who spoke and dive deeper into the topic from each week. Without further ado, join the party. Welcome back to another week of The After Party. We are here once again talking about fighting words. I'm Jeff, and I am here with Amy Chaney.
Hello.
Once again, and we are almost done with this series. We have one sermon left after this, but we are talking about this week, which the fightin' word, remind me, was...
Disruption.
Disruption. Mm. Amy, could you take about 60 seconds and tell us what the what the sermon was about today?
Yeah. Yeah, we spent time in the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 21. Today, where we looked at this instance where Jesus, the beginning of his last week of ministry, marches into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, and then he goes straight to the temple, and he has an episode of anger. He throws tables over onto their side, and he tells everybody, "This is my house, and you're ruining it." And he gets really mad, and this is unsettling for people because we're not used to seeing angry Jesus. We're used to seeing very gentle Jesus, and gentle Jesus is real as well. But angry Jesus comes out in Matthew 21 and in some other moments too. But we kind of unpack this and say that Jesus's anger is like the kind of anger we feel when a child that we love runs into the street and almost gets hit by a car. You know, we're not angry at the kid. We're angry because that child almost got really hurt. And Jesus has this sort of desperate, deep, painful, passionate burden for the fact that we're broken. And he was reaching the end of his life. He knew he was reaching the end of his life. And he knew that he was running out of time to really paint this picture. And so he tosses over some tables and he claims his space in that temple. And he says, "There will be no obstruction to people getting into my presence in the temple. This is my house. Get out of the way and stop exploiting people out here for money. This is a place for people to come and be with me, and you are ruining it." And so we look at that up alongside of things that ought to make us angry about this world. We live in a very broken place. We live in the midst of racism and sexism and ableism and human trafficking and slavery and abuse of all kinds and addiction and all of these things in our surroundings, in our life and in our culture that we ought to be angry about. And then we ought to, as a church, as people who love Jesus, do something about it, like rise up and disrupt our surroundings by stepping in and giving our time and our finances and our prayer and our compassion to people who need it, who need justice. So it was passionate, I'd say.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about some of that because you talked about anger and disruption. Mm-hmm. Disruption, especially as an essential part of reigning in the kingdom, that's so powerful. Mm-hmm. At first, when you opened up, you talked about Banksy, the street artist who disrupts a lot by putting his art in places it probably shouldn't be.
Not legally, anyway.
Yeah, right. but yet we enjoy it, and it's awesome. you also had a story that you said you weren't able to keep in about Banksy.
Yeah.
A way that he was super disruptive, so I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, so one of the reasons I like Banksy is because he's such a punk. You know, like, he... Not only does he keep his identity anonymous just to kind of keep us guessing, which is punkish, like, mm-hmm. that's sassy,
he's so, you know, punk rock.
But he also, so not only, the example I gave today in the sermon was this piece that was really disruptive to Jerusalem specifically and like the conflict going on there in the Middle East, but Banksy also spends an awful lot of time disrupting the art world in general, because he became super popular. And so now people, when he puts a piece on a concrete wall, people show up and they cut it off the wall and they put it in a frame.
Dang.
And then they sell it for tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Disrespectful.
And this really, really rubs Banksy the wrong way, is a term, he would definitely use a more passionate term than that if he were on this podcast. But so he has started disrupting that sort of art economy, the like commodification of his work, Recently, semi-recently, I guess this is a couple years ago now, yeah. But he followed one of his works was he placed one of his works in an auction house to be sold, and he like worked in or engineered in like a self-destruction factor into the frame. So the moment his artwork was sold for auction, like the moment the auctioneer said yeah. and sold, he pressed a button, or someone in the room, we don't know who, pressed yeah. a button, and the piece self-destructed. It started shredding itself. That's through the frame.
Hilarious.
And it was his way of kind of sticking it to the man, right. I guess. And so he disrupts the commodification, or the, like, I don't know, the exorbitant financial side right. of the right. art world, and saying, this is not the purpose of my work and you're ruining it. Kind of like, I mean, the connection to be drawn there is Jesus marching into the temple and being like, this sure. is my house and you're ruining it.
Right.
And Banksy is saying, this is my art and you're ruining it.
It's a very important statement.
Yeah.
I love it. We'll talk more about disruption, and I think it'll be hard to avoid it in this conversation, but I do want to take a little bit to talk about anger.
Yeah.
Which I think is, it's kind of hand in hand with disruption, whether yeah. you're angry to disrupt or you're angered by disruption.
Yes.
It's there. A line that you had said in your sermon was, anger is addictive and contagious. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was so, so true. So I guess I just got to ask, what makes you angry?
A lot of things that are not righteous make sure. me angry on a given day. Like I'm not perfectly, I painted this picture of what we ought to be, what we ought to look like if our hearts are like fully aligned with our calling to seek justice and be angry about the right things. But I am not perfectly mm-hmm. aligned to that calling in a given moment. I strive for it, but I have so much work to do.
Sure. We all do.
I get angry sometimes and bent out of shape when people I'm working with don't pull their own weight. Mm-hmm. Like, I was a horrible group project person in school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anyone. I don't really know anyone I respect who loved group projects.
Right.
but so that's one thing that like really follows me around, and I have to keep in check often, is like expecting people to contribute to a level and then being disappointed. You know, mm-hmm, my secondary right. feeling that, or my primary feeling mm-hmm. that then makes me angry, is that sense of disappointment and like resentment that then I have to pull more weight or something.
Sure.
But in a bit more of a righteous way, I am a woman. I'm a woman in ministry, in church. I'm a woman who preaches. And even though I am remarkably blessed to be practicing ministry and preaching in a church that is incredibly supportive of women in ministry, I still bump up against people thinking that I shouldn't be speaking
sure. right.
in church, in all kinds of places and spaces in my life. And that makes me mad. That makes me really angry, because it's a limit placed on what I feel like is my calling to be doing work mm-hmm. for the kingdom of God. And I get angry because I think that God's work through me gets limited, and his work through women everywhere
yeah,
gets
absolutely.
Limited, mm-hmm. limited by people's narrow perception of what women can or mm-hmm. should do. And that makes me angry, because sure. that limits God's power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a righteous thing I get angry about, that mm-hmm. I just experience probably the most frequently in my life. And, you know, women in ministry, we've come a long way. There are like so many more women in ministry now than mm-hmm. there ever were before. So I'm not neglecting the progress that we've
sure,
experienced
right.
at all. I'm celebrating it, if anything. But I still have moments where I feel mm-hmm. really dang mad, because
absolutely.
God's trying to work really hard through these women, and there are a lot of people who don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and that's so true. And I'm thankful to be part of this church community that mm-hmm. honors the role of women in ministry. And it's not unique to us, but there's still a lot of progress in a lot of churches to be made.
Yeah.
And I feel a little uncomfortable speaking to it myself, because
you shouldn't.
I am a man in ministry, and I have not experienced the oppression firsthand, but I have seen that in action, like at least men ultimately being prioritized over women.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told you this before. I've been to children's ministry conventions
yeah.
where where women are vastly the majority, like yeah. like a 90-10 ratio mm-hmm. of women to men, and like women are waiting in line for the bathrooms and the men's rooms are just like empty.
Yep. But
and so this representation of women in children's ministry is not bad in and of itself, of course.
Yeah.
But like the main speakers have often been men.
Yeah.
Which is I've just noticed that as shocking, and I can see how it would be completely angering to not be represented mm. well when you're doing work for God and not being acknowledged for it or not being given the authority or respect
yeah.
that matches with the gifts that God has given you.
Yeah. But what's really cool is your awareness of that, your sensitivity, and as a man in ministry, like that's why I love working at Harbor, because mm-hmm. it's filled with people who genuinely just notice what needs to be disrupted. And then we as a community have been brave enough to disrupt things and sure. put some women on stage and put a man in children's and youth ministry and yeah, right. shake things yeah. up a little yeah. bit. And it's really fun to see how creatively God works through that mm-hmm. and how he influences the minds of people not in our community just through the way we do ministry. And so mm-hmm. it's part of one of the exciting parts about being at Harbor and something that I'm grateful for every day.
Yeah. I love it. There is a discontent under that anger. This mm-hmm. anger points to a deeper issue. Mm-hmm. It's not just that you are it's not just that you have felt overlooked necessarily, but it is mm-hmm. there is a deeper value in that anger that yeah. all women have been underrepresented.
Yeah.
And we can stay here for a while, but I guess my question is in regards to the anger iceberg that mm-hmm. you talked about.
Yeah.
Would you mind talking about what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely.
What that means?
Yeah, and I think one of the to sort of like kick off with pausing on what you just said for like a second mm-hmm. is that the difference, I think, in whether in the how righteous that anger is that I feel as a woman in ministry is I don't feel like I've been overlooked very
sure,
much.
Right,
I have had such a privileged mm-hmm. experience in this and such a different experience in so many other women. But I get angry when I realize how few women mm-hmm. have had the support that I've
yeah,
had.
Right.
And that's a kingdom-centered anger that is about other – that's other-centered, mm-hmm. that's not centered on me. And I think that's how we know whether or not our anger is, like, rightly aligned mm-hmm. or rooted in the right things. And so the anger iceberg – is this illustration from psychology that shows, you know, we see anger. Anger is the part of the iceberg above the water, but then there's this massive block of ice underneath the water.
Mm-hmm, right.
And those are all the primary feelings that we feel that then display themselves as anger. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety. I mean, loneliness, betrayal, fear, disappointment, mm-hmm. all kinds of things make us show anger. There isn't a one size fits all. So we right. often misinterpret other people's anger mm-hmm. too simply.
Right.
You know, when someone's doing something angry at you, you just think that it's all hate being fired at you. Mm-hmm. But you actually do very well to approach that with wonder.
Sure.
If we were to hearken back to last week and wonder and be curious about what is actually inspiring that behavior.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Right.
And then that's where you're going to be able to meet them and reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't think about what those primary feelings are, we're just going to keep yelling at each other and
right.
never get – then it just is a ping pong game and we never get to the bottom of
right,
anything.
Right, we keep hitting each other's anger
yeah.
but not seeing the deeper emotions behind each other.
Right, yeah. So it's like patching up a leaky pipe without mm-hmm. ever like actually fixing the fact
right,
that it's
right.
loose or damaged or rusty or whatever.
Anger is a symptom of the real issue.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you kind of paint this picture of anger and peace. How they are, like, on the surface, they are very different ideas,
mm-hmm.
but they, in a very strange way, relate to one another.
Mm.
Do you have any thoughts on how they relate?
Yeah, I think that we idealize peace a little bit. We are never going to experience real peace to its fullest until we're in heaven. And while we're still here on this broken earth and this broken life, I think that anger is the only way for us to reach peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of, we talked a lot about Martin Luther King Jr. today and how his anger and his disruption over racism when he lived began a project of racial reconciliation mm-hmm, that our right. country is very much still working on.
Yes.
And so his disruption was not the end of the story, but it was the beginning of a process that still leaves many people righteously angry.
Right.
And there are continued disruptions that need to be made. And we won't achieve peace. We won't achieve reconciliation unless people continue to be angry about the things that aren't finished yet. And not angry in a petty way and not angry in a violent way. Angry in a, oh my goodness, like there is more richness and more love and more diversity in this life for us to experience and we're missing it because we are we're misaligned to our calling as people to love one another. So I think we have to stay open to being angry about things to continue progress towards peace that we'll then experience in full on the other side of life.
I think that anger is it's an indication that there is something that needs to be disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
This anger shows that there is something that is stagnant, a piece of this world that is stationary that needs to be disrupted to move forward. Like a ball can't move from being still until it is hit.
Yeah.
It is till its stillness is disrupted. I mean, it's science, right? It's the first law of motion.
An object in motion will stay in motion.
Yeah.
It's one of Newton's laws.
Yeah,
I never remember what's first, second, inertia, or third.
Yeah.
But
an object at rest will stay at rest unless it's acted on. So that disruption is essential.
Yeah.
I love that. And that anger is an indication of that needed disruption.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but laugh at the irony today as you were speaking that you were talking about disruption and there were so many disruptions. And this is not to... You know, it is the way of life that there are babies crying, there are people walking in late, there's phones going off, like there is disruption.
Mm-hmm.
Like we the normalcy, the expectations that you give a sermon, everyone shuts their mouths and then and then we all go home happy. But there was disruption. And I think that was so important. So I guess how can we, first, before we get into real necessary disruption, how do we embrace that disruption?
Yeah, I mean, I think that disruption in general, and this is a value that I think has been built in me as because I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And art exists for the very sake of disrupting people's thought processes.
Ooh, yeah,
the best art shakes you up and throws you for a loop. I tell my art students that the very best compliment I could ever give your work is, whoa, that's really weird. Like, that surprises me. Because, and even if it's as simple as just the way we use color, or it doesn't have to be like a bizarre or offensive image. Mm-hmm. It's just, we are delighted in the disruption of the surprise of something beautiful that we couldn't have imagined ourselves.
Right.
And so I really value experiences that are surprising to me. I value people that shake up the status quo, not just for the sake of it, but because you can tell they have an idea that is something that only they have.
Right, right.
And again, just to come back to Martin Luther King Jr., like he had a dream, he had an idea, and it's not that it was the only, that he was the only one who had it, but he stood up and he said, no, I have a vision for what this ought to look like, and it's a more peaceful reality than what we experience now. And I'm not standing down. And there's something, there's a thrill about that, about being in the presence of someone who's so convicted about making a more peaceful or a more harmonious version of our reality, that they're brave enough to stand up and say, no, like, I'm not going to just let this river continue flowing.
Yeah,
I'm going to stand in the middle of it and I'm going to make some waves.
Yeah.
And that is best when it is a shared value, something that much of humanity also needs for peace.
Yes.
And that isn't always done right. And it isn't always for righteous reasons. And sometimes people make waves that are selfish, and people get it wrong all the time. But there's still something that I can't like look away from when people are doing that.
Yeah, right.
It's really compelling to me. So I don't know if that did that answer your question?
I think it was better than any answer.
Okay.
from any question I could have formed. Let's talk about Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you talked about...
he's the real deal.
Yeah, he... A phrase... I don't know if you said the phrase or if I made it up, but he had a crescendo of disruption.
Mm, I think I said that.
I think we talked about that before you gave the sermon. Mm. I don't know if you actually spoke to it, but what was this crescendo of disruption that Jesus had?
Yeah. So Jesus spent a great deal of his ministry, which was a short 3 years. I mean, he didn't have like a decades long mm-hmm. ministry, right. But he spent most of that time performing miraculous things, preaching really surprising and challenging messages that challenged a whole lot about the order of the world at the time and the way that religious leaders were thinking about everything. And he would do so in a way, I think it's in one example is in Matthew chapter 9, where he heals like two blind men. And then he's like, don't tell anybody that I did this. And of course, right. then they go and right. they tell people mm-hmm. because they've just been mm-hmm. given their sight back, like miraculously by this
How
guy.
Could you not?
How could you not? Yeah. Exactly. But Jesus, in several different places throughout the Gospels, tell people that he encounters or that he affects or that he heals to just like, shh, don't say anything about this yet. And that's not because he's being modest. Mm-hmm. It's because he's not ready yet mm-hmm. for really bringing down the man.
Sure. Right.
He doesn't want to stir things up too soon. He's preparing people for mm. what he's about mm. to do. And if he had just shown up without all of that part of the story to lead up to it, to build up to it, then his resurrection would have not been as dramatic. And I don't think he did it just for drama's sake. I think he did it for impact. He did it because the resurrection is not a quiet thing. It is a trembling mm-hmm. like thing that scared people when they realized what happened. And so I think when I think about like a crescendo, Jesus was building up this, he was preparing and he was building up his ministry to a point where then he's up on the Mount of Olives. He's looking at Jerusalem. He's about to march in on Palm Sunday. And he's like, this is it. Mm-hmm. It's time. And the cymbals start going and the drum right. beat picks up and the bass is loud and we're screaming and wailing. And it's a crescendo. It's this like high point. And we're going to actually tell a few stories about that week next week. Right. When in next week's message, we're going to spend time in that final week of Jesus's life. And it's like, it's just like one thing after another. And he just packs it in. Mm-hmm. And maybe every week of his life was like that. Mm-hmm. And we just don't know that based on the writing.
Sure.
But it feels very much mm-hmm. like he is just ramping it up mm-hmm. and he's not wasting any sort of mistake. When he marches into the temple, he does not risk anyone thinking whether or not that is his house.
Right.
He, like, no mistakes. Right. And he just takes it over and he ramps it up and he turns into, he like lights up beast mode.
Right.
You
there weren't as many like confusing metaphors and parables. Yeah. It was action. It was disruptive.
And it was like,
disruptive.
No, this is urgent. You yeah. listen to me right now. This is for real. Yeah. And this is your job moving forward. Mm-hmm. And this is who I am. And this is why I am here. And this is now what your job is because you're looking at me right now and you're experiencing this wow. with me. And it's like, it's boom. It's just so loud. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
It's powerful.
Sorry, I get excited.
That's great. That's exactly what we're talking about. This passion. You need this passion.
I'm yelling again.
It can be.
Sorry.
No, it's necessary. It's exactly what you're saying. Whether it's anger or passion, it is necessary to be disruptive in order to create unity. It is necessary to be disruptive to get the ball rolling in order to create peace, to bring us into the nature that God created us to be in, to get us out of our patterns, to get us out of this stagnancy, this sinfulness, this corruption, this whatever bad thing there is that we are just in passively.
Yeah.
This disruption is necessary to move us forward.
Yeah.
So with that,
preach.
Do you have any other thoughts that you weren't able to talk about or anything you want to close with before we sign off?
Oh my gosh. I don't know that there's like a major idea that I left out or anything like that. I think there was a lot packed into that message. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, I would want my last word to be, if you walked away today really uncomfortable with this image of Jesus being angry, it's
good.
It is uncomfortable uh-huh. and I don't think everyone is okay with anger. Actually, I know for sure.
Oh, I'm not. I hate anger.
Yeah, well, we've talked about our Enneagram types and their difference. And I think that there is, I'm so glad that there are people that don't love being angry. And I'm so glad that there are people that are comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
And we need each other. And I think that if you're one of those people who was sitting there like, this lady is not speaking my language, I am not going to go out and get angry because that is really uncomfortable and I don't like how it makes me feel. I think that's true, but I would guess that you are angry about something. Mm-hmm. And as long as that's a something that God's written on your heart, that is just going to be a force for good. There's nothing more peaceful than knowing that God has set you on a mission to help people. And the most peaceful people I know, like you, you know, like you have people that are clearly written on your heart and you fight for peace for them. And that's not angry, like flipping tables angry, but that's angry, like disrupting the system and elevating people who have less authority and power in a space and sacrificing oneself for the better of other people, for this dignity, this human dignity. And so if you walked away uncomfortable today, I would love to talk to you about it because it is super uncomfortable, but there's a place for both those of us who are very comfortable being mad and angry and those of us who aren't. And I think God is using both types of people and everyone in between.
I love that. So Jesus is punk rock. We have to fight the system.
Oh my
Rage
gosh.
Against the machine.
Jeff. That's incredible. Yeah.
That's all I'm getting from this.
I guess sort of.
Kind of.
Rock on, crouton.
Peace out. Thank you for joining the After Party. You can follow our sermon series online at harborofhope.org, and you can party with us again next week wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you're in the area, please visit us at Harbor of Hope Christian Church on Sundays at 9:30 or 11. Party on.